Grab your popcorn and snacks. Find a comfy spot, take a seat or lie down, and let me transport you to a place of fantasy, ghost stories, ancient legends, odd creatures, alien encounters, and other magical topics. You may even decide to join the conversation. From faraway lands to your own backyard, with a small dash of pixie dust, turn out the lights and open your minds. The journey is about to begin. Hey, welcome. Welcome, welcome. I am so excited tonight. I'm so stoked. Our guest tonight. Wow. I'm Charlotte. I'm going to be your host for the next hour or so, maybe longer, depending how things go, because I have a lot for you tonight. In fact, I happened to find, I had this gentleman on 5 years ago on Blog Talk Radio. And so I got into my email and I happened to find some other sounds that he sent me back then. So we've got those sounds in addition to what he sent me for this show. I am so stoked, okay? My name is Charlotte. I'm going to be your host for the next hour or so. We're the California Haunts Paranormal Investigation Team based out of Sacramento. We're 35 strong up and down the state. Oregon, Washington, Nevada, and Hawaii. So we've got people everywhere right now. But anyway, I want to thank everybody for coming tonight. If you're watching on YouTube, please, please, please subscribe. There's a little guy, a little ghost that has a magnifying glass and a Sherlock Holmes hat. Please subscribe to our channel because we have more than 200 videos and all kinds of guests coming on. All kinds of guests coming on that came on and all that good stuff. But what I want to talk about right now is this: who's coming on tonight. Ron Moorhead is the first person to ever get vocalizations from Sasquatch. And I know there's other people that have them, okay? And so I want to talk to him about that because you know, his Mr. Moorhead's are completely different. I'm thinking it's a different dialect, you know, like anything else. You know how maybe, you know, we don't speak French or whatever, so you know, this particular group probably has its own dialect as opposed to the other group that, you know, that we've had on the show. But I'm really excited because the last interview we did was 2 hours and we really talked. We talked up a storm, and so I'm stoked. I'm really stoked. I'm going to just shut up and bring him on. I mean, that's how excited I am. Okay? So here we go.
Here.
There I am. It's so good to have you on again.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Yeah.
I found, you know, because you sent me four things last time, a sound, and I found them.
Well, good.
So we have those to talk about tonight.
It's been a while, yeah.
It has been a while. What have you been up to?
Well, I moved to North Carolina, so it's 9:30 back here right now. I did that about 3 months ago. I moved out of the Pacific, and anyway, I've just been back here enjoying a nice log home on a lake, and weather's great. It's going to be 80-some-odd degrees tomorrow, and so that's what I've been up to. I've been speaking at these conventions and these broadcasts like yours, so I enjoy that. That's all I do now. You know, I'm pushing the age bracket here, so I don't jump around the woods and swim rivers anymore.
You did all that study, you know, it's like, that's a game for the young. You know, that's how I feel with some of the stuff, too. You know, remember, like Star Trek, when William Shatner says it right, Captain Kirk, he says, oh, galloping around the cosmos is a game for the young.
Yeah.
For me, because I used to, like you, I was out in the woods and fishing a lot, you know. Traipsing through the tulies, no, it's a game for the young. Not going to happen. I'm so excited. You know, I had Mike Patterson on a few months ago. Uh-huh. And that's why I was saying, you know, when we listen to the ones that you got, I'm thinking, you know, I think it could be a situation where, assuming what he, you know, I mean, what he has is true. So we're gonna say that different dialects from different, you know, because they're in different areas. Maybe they came from a different land bridge or something when they came over. But yours just totally blew me away because they sound so Asian.
Yeah. Well, they're different, and I say different. A lot of people say they've heard sounds just like we have, but of course, not everybody's recording them like Mike and like myself and like. Well, I think that's the only ones that really got too much going on, very much going on. So, yeah, it's just that I think there are different types of them. They have different attributes, and they can do different things because there's some anomalies associated with them. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. And that's what I get into with my PowerPoint programs when I talk at these conventions and stuff. So. It's quite a trip. You know, I've been doing this now for over 5 decades. And I started when I was 29 years old in the Sierra Mountains of California. And for those that don't know, which I'm sure you got some listeners that don't know me from anybody, you know. But I'm responsible for those Sierra sounds, you know, that's been so heard around the world really now.
Right. And can you tell people, where did you go to get these sounds? That's the key.
Well, I don't tell the spot because I don't want it to be inundated.
You don't have to. I'm just saying.
Yeah. But it's the Sierra Nevada Mountains of California. Yeah,
right.
I tell people it's between Yosemite and Tahoe. So that's what I tell people. And that's where you can, you know, there's a lot of reports actually between that area. So it's not isolated.
I wanted to make room for your stuff. Make sure we had enough room and stuff. So I have a picture. I got off your website. Okay. And this is where you used to go up. And I know you're not disclosing, you know, where this is. But didn't somebody tear it down?
Yeah, it went down in 2015.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that was because it was coming anyway, but the Forestry Service found out about it, and you're not supposed to have stuff like that up there, so they wanted to take it down. So the guys went in and took it down, and I didn't go with them because I didn't want to be associated at the time because I'm out here in the public's eye.
Right.
And I didn't want people to, I didn't want them to know where. I stayed away from it at that time. Last time I was up there was in 2018 with David Pilates, who did the 401 Missing Hunted. And he did a little film about 15 minutes on me up there, interviewed me. And we was up there for a week, him and his videographer. So he's the only one I've ever let go in there and taken to the spot just because I say the only one. He's not the only one. I've taken Scott Nelson, the cryptolinguist, and mm-hmm. and a biologist in there to do some study work. But other than that, I kind of keep it private because actually the heirs of the Johnsons who started the camp in the 58, I think they started going up there. Their kids and grandkids still go up there for hunting season. And we just don't want it inundated because if people find out about what goes on up there and the anomalies associated with that area, it'll just be inundated with researchers and be destroyed. Well, I'm not sure how much of it's left because when we were up there in 2018, there was a lot of fires going on in California. So mm-hmm. I did fly over in a little airplane, though, and it didn't look like that area right there had been torched. It looked like it was still intact. So, but I don't know of anyone that's been there since then. I don't know if Johnson's go up there or not because I know the trails were cut off. You couldn't even go that way because of the fires right after that. So I'm not sure what. I just don't know what the status is right now of that area.
So what started you on this? I mean, did you just happen to go up there camping or hunting, you know, and then you heard something or?
Well, here's what happened. Yeah, it was in 1971 and it's just a hunting camp. No one's looking for Bigfoot. Mm-hmm. I wasn't a hunter at the time, but the guys who were hunting were my friends and they were up there and they came out with some, a story about, these monsters and Bigfoot, and well, they didn't know it was Bigfoot, but it left a Bigfoot impression. So, but they weren't hunting for Bigfoot. And one of the guys that got freaked out, he just left and he wouldn't go back. And the guys were supposed to come out. I was friends like with them all. So, Wise wanted to go back, see if these guys got eaten, if they got carried away, or what happened to them. Because if you don't know what you're messing with, they don't know. You don't know. It's just big. Mm-hmm. It makes a big voice, got a Bigfoot in it. So he wouldn't go back unless I went with him. So I went with him, and that's how I got involved with him. And then I seen the track. The guys were okay. They were just packing up to get out. And but it's 8 miles into the wilderness. It's quite a trek to get in there. And he about killed me getting me in there because he's like a mule, this guy was. Anyway, I got to ride a horse out, so that helped me a lot. My legs were like jello. And that's Al Berry and myself right there. He's the investigative reporter that went in 1972, and he recorded some sounds too. He was going in looking for a hoax, thinking it was probably somebody pulling his leg, but it wasn't. And he wrote a book about it. And anyway, he got the fostered the sounds study of the sounds at the University of Wyoming. Dr. Curlin, electrical engineer, studied them for a year and. He gave a report on it, wrote a paper, and it's in a book called Man Like Monsters on Trial, and it was presented to the UBC in British Columbia, 1978, I think it was. And anyway, that didn't go as far as we thought it would, but it showed a professor behind it who said the sounds were not manipulated. They were not speeded up. They were not slowed down. They were There was no 60-cycle hum. Of course, he found that out through I.E. Tybel, the people that studied the Watergate tapes. He sent them back to New York, and they said, well, there's no 60-cycle hum in it. These are much too powerful to be a human-made. And it represented an animal called Dr. Curlin, about 8 foot tall. So that was a big step and a big hurdle, but it still wasn't enough to get academia out of their box, because most of academia think that these things are some type of a Loch Ness monster or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, it wasn't until Scott Nelson got a hold of him in 2008. He's a cryptolinguist, a two-time graduate of the Foreign School of Foreign Languages at the Navy, cryptolinguistic school or something like that, foreign languages. And anyway, I vetted him very well. He's a two-time graduate of that, and he studied the sounds. He heard them by accident, came out and interviewed me to get the context, interviewed Al Berry and got the context of the sounds. And he went back and studied them. He said, this is a language. And his training was to detect in the military, in the Navy, to detect manipulation in languages, or if it is a language, number one. And that's a big deal, by the way. It's bigger than anybody ever thought it was. But having these things, having a language is unique.
Right.
I found out from Professor Lieberman, Brown University, that only humans are supposed to have the hindbrain, the mechanism here for language. And language, by the human definition of language, that's what these have, by the way, is a morpheme stream of words which make up a cognitive sentence like we're talking now. Mm-hmm. Dolphins don't have that. Whales, nothing has that. Everybody communicates. Everything communicates, but not with language like humans do. Only humans are supposed to have that in the world. Well, these things have that. So that tells me, that takes us to another level. It tells me that there's a human component to these, at least the ones we were dealing with. That's the only ones I'm talking about, the ones we were dealing with in the Sierras there. So they have a human component to them, I think. And not I think. They have to have language. And by the way, these are outside the average human range. Humans can't do this. You see the study Dr. Curlin did, you see a box where he's put the average human range in, and then you see the sound that he studied, where all these little icons are that made those sounds. And but still, people who say they can make these sounds and they can imitate them and all that, they're full of you know what. Well, they can't do it. They step, these creatures are stepping on each other with their vocal mechanism. You know, they're talking to each other, and very clear. I got some really clear recordings. When I had some very clear ones too, but they burned up in a house fire I had. But anyway, that's how it got started with me. I started going back up there just as often as I could, and I started becoming a hunter at that time, because that's what the camp was all about. The Bigfoot was a big deal, but we were underestimating what they were at the time. They were just some kind of a big unidentified ape running around the woods. That's all we thought. But there's so many strange things going on, too. You didn't know what to do with it. So we just kind of put that up on the shelf and thought, well, it's still just a bear-like animal, some kind of a monster out there. But it got me on a trek of 50 years now. I've been interviewing people, talking to people, traveling around the world, been in the Siberia, into Nepal, South America a couple of times, studying the elongated skulls, see if there was a crumb trail on the sagittal crest that they report on Bigfoot up here. And so I've been studying it and looking into it and wrote a couple of books. And it's been quite a captivating thing for me. Exciting thing, I got to tell you.
The thing is, they're in almost every state. It's not like they're just in California. You know, they're in British Columbia. They've even got them in Tennessee, you know, and maybe where you're at too. Didn't I hear there's a story about a lake monster or something that hangs near the lakes in your area?
Yeah, I spoke in Gatlinburg last year, and also I'm going to Knoxville next month. I'm going to Hastings soon. I get to lose track of these things, but yeah, I spoke in back here. I've been speaking back here. There's a big interest in it back here because there's a lot of being seen back here, and especially in the Davy Crockett area, I guess, a big forest over there. And so I got I was surprised. You know, there's thousands of people show up at these conventions now, and there's thousands. I was just in Kelso, Washington here last month, and there was over 2,400 and some odd people there. And it's just a lot of interest in this subject matter, because a lot of people are witnessing these things, and more people are hooking into it. I don't try to convince anybody they're out there. That's not what I'm doing. I don't. I just tell them what I think they're all about and what I, where I think it take has taken me over 50 years of studying it. And it's taken me into how they do what they do, because that's what I've heard so many reports of. These things are disappear, or the trackway stop, or something like that takes place. And a lot of that stuff happened to us up there. And I think I got some of the, I'm headed towards the answers to that. And I think it runs into quantum physics, really. And most people, we live in a three-dimensional paradigm here. It's not a paradigm. It's what we live in, three dimensions. But there's more, as we probably know if you're into physics at all. They've established 11, at least 11, I think, different dimensions. And we're only seeing three. We see in the light's parameters, and light's parameters is 440 terahertz to 770 terahertz. That's the frequency. Everything's frequency, energy, and vibration, according to Nikola Tesla, which I think we must know that. But we've all been brainwashed with Newtonian physics says that's all there is. But Newtonian physics of 1687 was based in everything being material, physical, predictable, measurable. Well, nothing's, no. I asked somebody how far it is to the end of the universe one time. That's not measurable. How do you measure that? You know, so I set me off on a trek ever since I was a little boy. I looked up the stars and wondered where in the world is the end of space. Somebody tell me what that wall looks like, you know, and it can't. So you have to just conceive it. And that's where quantum physics is. It's all mathematics, and the universe is perfectly mathematically perfect. So that's where the physicists, theoretical physicists, get off, like Einstein did his theories through math. And all the, you know, Schrodinger, Bohr, all those physicists of old, they got into modern physics, which is called quantum physics. And that's only a little over 100 years old. Dr. Max Planck, who got a Nobel Prize for it, that was in 2000, or 1918 it was, yeah. Just a little over 100 years ago. But you don't hear that being taught too much. You know, you got to really work to learn anything about it. But what you learn is what you can see in your three-dimensional environment with your eyes, perceptions, and that's all you can, we're trained to believe. But it's just not that way. There's more going on. We have to live with it, because that's what we're in. But right. Quantum physics rides on the back of classical science.
When we think about that, and we think about the Sasquatch, I saw you on a TV show. I can't remember what it was. But they were talking about how sometimes there's a blue light when Sasquatch appears and disappears.
Well, I saw a UFO up there once. It was a blue ball of light. It might have been, it might have been me when you saw
maybe
that.
That's right,
I'm the one that said that, because I did. And that was when all this stuff was going on, too. But it was a controlled big ball, like the moon coming down, except it was controlled. And I lost it behind the tree line, you know, so I'm not sure. But it was close to our area. And but there's more going on than that. There's the sounds you couldn't identify, and they weren't vocalizations. They were metallic sounds.
Wow.
Time we thought we heard it, I thought it was a tuning fork, you know, just a huge tuning fork above our head. This is the daytime. You're looking around to see the source of it, and you can't find it. There's no helicopters doing that. You know, it's not a helicopter sound. It's a whoo, 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 you know, like a tuning fork. And there's just other things going on, too. I mentioned this filming that I did up there in 2018. I thought I heard a car door slam outside this shelter. Now, we're 8 miles in the wilderness, very imposing. You can't drive to it. That's how far you have to hike to get there, horseback or hike. You can't take a motor vehicle in there at all. So it's way high in the Sierra Nevadas mountains of California. But a lot of strange things went on with us up there.
Like you say, when you talk about quantum physics and stuff, could it be our own government, you know, tapping into that kind of stuff and messing around with that stuff up there? Because, I mean, no one technically is going to be up there walking around and stay, you know what I mean? And so for them to be doing these tests, that's where they would do it if they were going to do it.
Well, I don't know how important we were to them, but they were sure pulling something over our eyes if they were doing it that way, because they were making the sounds, too, and leaving nothing but their tracks. So you have to wonder, I mean, nothing's impossible, but I don't think so. I think it was something foreign, something from the cosmos, maybe, or Or just something we're not aware of. But I think there's a lot of alien activity going on now. There has been for eons. I think they probably messed with the genome of different species on this planet, and this is one of them, the Bigfoot phenomena. But they're not all the same. I got to tell you, I think different species have been on this planet and are here now. I'm sure they got a hybridization program going on. That I just believe that. And they're trying to indoctrinate their species to this environment, is my opinion.
Well, see, that's a thought I always had because, like in the ancient times, because obviously they were here. I mean, you look at the, Egyptian pyramids and the drawings that are in there. I mean, obviously there's alien influence. And my thought was that, we have the Neanderthal and all this going on, that maybe they came at that point and were trying to mess around with the genetics back then, and then they ended up creating this other type of being. But then when they realized that it wasn't going to be, I don't want to say intelligent, because they are intelligent in their way. They are intelligent for what they're doing out in the woods and stuff. But as far as the aliens were concerned, they were too hard to, something like they were too hard to handle or something, and then they just sent them all back, and then they were able to multiply here.
Well, I'm not sure, that that's the way they all were. I kind of think that
I'll
probably
put my
aliens have
funny
been here
cigarette down now, okay? Okay, fair.
thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago. I think probably they've messed with that's how long they've been messing with species, and they did take the troglodyte, I think, and probably messed with his genome and did DNA on him and made him into an intelligent being. Because they are intelligent and
Right.
they're sapient. They're not just intelligent. They're very, in fact, I got to tell you, I think there's what I was dealing with up there probably a little more advanced than we are. And now that's hard to people swallow. We're supposed to be the most thing on this earth,
Oh
right?
yeah, that's what I was getting at. I mean, like I said, they are intelligent. They really are, but by our standards. But you know what I mean.
They're intuitive too. They're very intuitive. They're very stealthy. They've learned to be that way. The Patterson Bigfoot, which most people have heard about, 1967 in Bluff Creek, I don't think that was the same type of entity that we were dealing with. And because of the anomalies associated with what we were dealing with, I think there's got to be a maybe an alien component to these things. So, what they were doing, why they were reaching out to us like they were, and messing with us and toying with us sometimes, it was. We don't know why, other than maybe so I could talk to you tonight. I don't know. Yeah, because it's been quite a trip and quite a learning experience for me to get into. Because I think Bigfoot's the smaller story here. The bigger story is what's going on this planet, and I think that's what I'm tuning into more and more and more as I go. But I get called out on these Bigfoot things and the brings me into what I think, and this is what I think. I'm going to say what I think.
I
I'm
agree with
80
you.
years old now, so I can say what I think and not
You
worry
say what
about
you
it.
want, yeah.
Well, some people put me in the woo-woo camp because I believe that they can do all these strange things. Well, nothing can be smarter than humans, right? Well, BS. There's a lot of things smarter than us, not a lot, but everything's energy, frequency, and vibration. And I think who was it? Edgar Mitchell. Dr. Edgar Mitchell, he said that it takes classical and quantum sciences together to have clear perception, and that's what you have to do. You have to understand that there's more going on than what you meet your eyes, and what you can, we can't hear infrasound or ultrasound, but they're existing. We can't see everything. Animals can see more than we can. They got a better range of eye frequency. But these things are able to. I also I gotta bring up something else that I love to talk about now, is these people say they disappear. Well, for a long time you don't agree with that. You just no, nothing can disappear. Well, yeah, it can go out of our perception. And how does that happen though? That's the key right there. It's quantum physics, because if everything's a vibration, if they can change the vibrational frequency somehow, they can change matter into energy. And there they will disappear. They will go through the fourth dimension of the plasma field, and just you won't see them. They'll look like a ghost. And then what happens? Their trackways, the trackways just stop because there's no more density.
Right.
And, you know, that's if you really want to get into it, was a doctor, what was his name? I wrote it down here because I knew I was going to want to talk about this one. Paul Derrick, 1933, won the Nobel Prize for how you mathematically showed how matter can go directly into energy. Okay, how do you buy that one? Well, now CERN, you know, you know what CERN is,
right?
Over in France. Well, they've proven that through CERN, you know, how they can create matter from energy and energy from matter. You can go back and forth with it. I had to say that part because that's fun.
Absolutely.
Because these things can change their matter into energy through vibrational frequency.
There's got to be a lot of them out there, you know, that people are unaware of. And it makes a lot of sense because as much as we, as the humans are in the woods, you know, with their cars, with their ATV, you know, with the horses and hunting and doing all this other stuff, there's still a rare thing to see.
Oh, absolutely.
You
it's
know,
like
and that's
getting
why,
hit by lightning twice, you know.
Yeah. And that's why I agree with you where they must have some kind of capability to hide.
Well, I believe that. And, of course, I think there's a science behind how they do that. And why didn't we see them more often? Because sometimes right. I'd hear them walking around our shelter out there because so many sounds we got, they were right out there. And I'm waiting for the light to break in the shelter's walls, you know, because it's just a lean-to there. And yet you never saw the shadow. You never saw anything break, you know, because you hear it out there, but you don't see it. And I wondered, we didn't think about anything like this at the time. We just underestimated what we're dealing with totally.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't try to figure this out. We thought we're still smarter than they are, right? Well, you could rig up a camera trap, which we did on several occasions, but they'd go around it. Well, you know, you got it 6 feet high, and they've been coming in that way every night after the food, and all of a sudden they won't come in that way because there's a black thread 6 foot up there. Well, they watch you do that. They know what's going on. They're not a stupid animal, at least what we were dealing with. I want to re-emphasize that because I think over the eons, and we can talk about these things being here for eons, they've probably inbred and crossbred with the indigenous people, and that's given them more of a human component. Then bringing them more into what we are. And that's what I think the Patterson film represents, was something that a hybrid type being more so than what we were dealing with in Sierras there. But again, a lot of people have seen these things all through California, Oregon, and the Pacific Northwest, all the way into Washington. I just moved off the Olympic Peninsula, and there's quite a bit going on up there.
Do you think, have you seen rises and increases in the activity?
Well, I think more and more people are getting aware. So, and I think the young ones of these, because when they do procreate, they keep their young ones in this environment, I think, until they learn how to do what they can do. Mm-hmm. And that's what we had a young one up there. In fact, I record his voice. I think it's young. It sounds like a young one. It sounds like a big one coming down on it for getting too bold. And that's what I think the young ones are doing. They're just jumping out a little bit more. But we're also in the age of enlightenment, too. So I think these things are coming out, and they're being more exposed. We're more infiltrated into the forest more, and they're multiplying. So more and more sightings are happening, and that's why there's so many people interested in this because, you know, wherever I go, once they find out I'm involved in this, and I don't advertise it all that much, but once they find out I'm involved in this, I get flocked with people saying, yeah, well, my co-and-so, or I saw this, they got some kind of connection to something. They don't disbelieve it and throw you out like they would have 20 years ago, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's just amazing how people are hooking into this, and I love how they resonate with my theories here, too, because that's there is a science now, because most people, like I say, either in the ape camp over here, or you're in the woo-woo camp over here. Well, what I say and what I said in my last convention, I said, you know, if you go to church on Sunday, if you believe in God, welcome to the woo-woo camp. Because, you know, some of these scientists can be very religious on Sunday and go to church and believe, yeah, something's going to happen when we die. Yet they have to stay in the parameters of their classical ways through the week with their studies. But according to Einstein, according to Stephen Hawking, according to all physicists, energy can't die. So we only change form.
Mm-hmm.
So these religions will say, well, you're going to go to heaven when you die. Well, if physicists say you're going to go into another form, another dimension, and that's where I think these things are able to go. Somehow they can change their matter into energy, and that's, anyway, it goes on from there.
When you first started going up there, I mean, were they less active with you, or did it start off right away where you were hearing sounds and all this was going on?
It started off right away in the 70s, early 70s. I mean, 71, 72 was very active. 74, that's when I started. They finally started interacting with us while we were outside that shelter. And that was just me and Bill McDowell, my friend. And we were out there. We just hauled supplies in our horses and mules. And they knew we were coming. They knew where we was going. They got there before we did. I established that the next morning when I seen their tracks and some things that went on. They actually did a couple of things that we know. They did it just for us so we could see it. And that was 1974. And that's the night, by the way, I got to see one, which was my first all this time. And they were, I could say, interacting with us. And I started recording. I got my little tape recorder, cassette. That's all we had in those days. And started recording it. And that's what I produced my second CD with, my story. And those sounds, the tree knocking, the whooping sounds, the chattering back and forth with me. I started yelling back. Again, underestimated. I was trying to mimic them when they were trying to tell me something. And you could tell it was a question. I mean, just from the inflection on the sentence. So I don't know what they were saying. The cryptolinguist transcribed a language. He did not translate a language. Mm-hmm. So until it could get translated, I had people over the years say, oh, I know what they're saying to you. They all tell me something different, though. So how do you know what to believe?
You know, was there ever any worry, like when you guys were out? I don't know how you did your recording. Did you do the recordings outside by the fire, or did you do the recordings inside?
Inside mostly, except for the one night in 74 when they started interacting with us while we're outside by our stove. I was fixing, Bill was putting the horses away, and I started the stove up with fire. We hauled that in a couple of years before and put it together. And, so I was making our dinner and getting it ready. And what we found out is once they start whooping and knocking and pounding and doing stuff like that, they just leave it alone. Don't try to shine a light out there and see what's going on. Just act like nothing's going on. Don't give them the time of day. And they'll start coming in closer. And the first thing you know, they started yelling out at me. And that's when I started yelling back, like, okay, I'll go with it. And I got it all recorded, and that was fun. That was an exciting night.
The one that you actually saw, how close was it to you?
Oh, it was way ways away, probably 60 yards, maybe. Yeah, about like that. Maybe 40 or 50, somewhere in there. He's just shooting through the trees, bright moonlit night. And he was coined the Samurai Cry. We was taping him anyway. And actually, Matt Moneymaker from BFRO coined that sound in 1995 when he heard it and put it on his website. And it's been kind of taken off. Oh, that's samurai language or something. But he made this big cry up behind me, and I seen him going streaking down to where we think the little one was with the female. And we think. I seen just him going through real fast, and very fast, by the way. Just like floated through the trees. And so that's my only glimpse. And Bill saw one that night, too. And it was a long time coming.
That's incredible. I mean, to just go up there. To me, I don't know if I'd be. I told you last time that I had. I was thinking about joining up with BFRO. You know, I had their handbook and everything I had read. I don't know if I have it in me to be that brave to do what you did, because you don't know. I mean, obviously, Well, maybe at first, you know what I mean, because you don't know what their reaction's going to be.
Well, when you're 29, nothing can hurt you, right?
There you go, yeah.
I was 30, right on there. It started at 29, but it went on for quite a while. And that's what's unique about it, too, is these things knew we were there. They knew we weren't going to shoot at them. We felt like after a while they weren't going to attack us, because the first sounds we started recording were very aggressive, and chest beating and teeth popping and really gorilla-type sounds. But yet they were chattering. Mm-hmm. And talking to each other, and I say talking, it's very rapid chatter. It's the same thing that was reported by John Green when he interviewed Albert Osman from the Toba Inlet, British Columbia in 1924. That's how long that's been. And he said he was kidnapped, supposedly in hell for 6 days in this bowl up in Toba Inlet there, or inland from there. Carried away and held there for 6 days, and he was held by a male, which carried him there, and there was a female there and two adolescents. And he observed them for quite a while, and he said they were chattering amongst themselves. So this isn't the first report of them chattering. There's a lot of that stuff goes on. Sometimes, too, you'll think there's some people over there, because you will. And sometimes you'll be out in the forest. You might think you hear your name called or your dog's name calling. Your dog's not even there. Mm-hmm. They'll play with you like that. And they think they just want to, they think we think we're smarter than them. That's what it is. But when you're out in the woods, it's their territory. It's their environment. They got it over us out there.
But like you say, you know, the more you went up, the more relaxed they were because they recognized you.
Yes, they definitely knew who we were. Yeah, I have no doubts about that whatsoever. Because that night in 74, that day in 74, when we went in, we packed our mules up and horses and got to start off real early so we could make it all the way into camp. And about a couple hundred yards up the trail, there's a trail partially up there. A couple hundred yards up the trail, our horses and mules got rowdy. And that, we didn't think much of it. It could have been a bear, could have been a deer, could have been a rattlesnake. I got a 52-inch rattlesnake band around my hat, one of my hats. And so I didn't think much of it. We just kept going. Well, about a quarter mile up the trail, maybe a half mile up the trail, seen this big track, perpendicular trail, Bigfoot track. And I thought, oh, that's it. You know, they're here. That's maybe what happened to us down below. Maybe that's what it was. But they were probably observing us packing our animals. And then they took off. And if you could follow that track the way it was headed right towards our, we couldn't go that way, but it was headed right towards where our camp was miles away. But anyway, we got to camp and it was just getting dark. And like I say, Bill was undoing the animals and getting the food out. And I was, started a fire and we started the meal. And it was just getting dark. And we heard the big pop of the limb. And that's what they'll do too. It's not like some little bear or some deer stepping on a limb. It's a big crack. And, okay, something's out there. And we're still outside. Because we wondered, should we go in? Because we'd always had to go in when something started happening. They wouldn't mess with you. No, let's stay outside. So we stayed out, and all of a sudden you're hearing the whooping sounds. You know, there's a whooping over here and whoop whoop over here. Different types of whoops were going on. I think that's the messaging they have between each other. And so same way with the rock cockering. You hear the rock. I've got this taped, by the way. You hear the rock copping, you know, popping and rhythmically. Mm-hmm. And you hear a tree knocking over, you think it's a tree. You think it's rock, because that's what it sounds like. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, like I say, if you just ignore them like we did, then all of a sudden they start yapping. And they start yapping at you. And I yapped back. It was fun. Exciting, I got to say. Yeah. And that went on for about an hour that night.
That's incredible. There's reports, you know, of them throwing rocks and stuff at people. Did you experience anything like that where they were tossing rocks, not so much at you guys, but just to me, to get your attention?
Not at our camp. Now, Larry Johnson, one of the guys that was up there, he's Warren Johnson's son, he was coming in from a way he normally don't come in, is the camp, walking in. And he said a rock, a pretty good sized rock, was thrown over his head. And it wasn't just falling, it was thrown. And when that happens, that means you're getting too close to something. You ought to change your direction or something like that. So anyway, there was one other time Al Berry and I went on an outing together up in Chester around Lake Almador up there. And these guys in the woods way back in their mining camp, an old abandoned mining camp, said they'd been encountering these Bigfoot creatures. They'd seen it a time or two. And we went, they picked us up at the airport. I drove, flew up there in my plane, and they took us to where they had this going on. We was way back in the middle of nowhere, this into this mining road, and we was around the fire, because it's dark, and all of a sudden, there goes a rock right by us, you know, hit this tree. And I mean, it was like an arrow going by you. And Al Berry was recording at the time, because we was talking around the fire, And it took something that could to catapult that thing with one heck of an arm or something. And just nothing happens like that with just a human arm, or I don't know how. Anyway, we found where next morning we seen where it hit the tree. We found the rock. And so they throw rocks, but you don't ever hear them hitting something. I'm sure they could if they wanted to. They're probably excellent at that. These guys wouldn't spend the night. We did, just because we're that way.
Right.
so what? Either live or die. It's an experience
That's
that
pretty
counts.
funny. Yeah, but that was at Chester. That area is known for that because that's cave country up there. I mean, Mount Shasta and all, and all that stuff.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Well, all up and down there, people want to know, oh, where can I go to have a Bigfoot experience? Well, most of them think they want to have one, but they get out there and something happens, they run, because it scares them. And I got to tell you, the only thing I think that you got to worry about is your own fear. I think that's your only enemy you have. If you don't have fear, you're probably not going to get bothered by too much because nothing can hurt you. And that's how I see life now. That's how
When
I've
you
seen it
talk
for a long
about there
time.
being older ones and younger ones, how did you determine that?
Just the sound of the voice.
Okay.
It's just a smaller voice, and you hear this big voice coming down. If you listen to my recordings, you can. Well, actually, the little voice only comes with the download in my book. My book, Voices in the Wilderness, has a download of sounds, and I used to send out a CD with that, but I got too busy with it, and I couldn't pack it. I just didn't want to mess with it, so I have it filled now through Amazon, and I couldn't put a CD with it then. So I just put the download link in there, and they can hook onto that and hear the sound. Or you can download it all from my website, and all of them's downloadable. And you can hear the little voice, and you can tell it's a small one. And plus, we've seen tracks in the snow up there when it did snow and we were still there. A little 9-inch track along with an 18-inch track was dropping along the snow. So that tells you there's something smaller than the big ones. And then there's some huge ones up there too, though. We found some really nice big tracks up there.
Would this primarily happen at night? This conversation that you would have with them?
Yes, mostly in the dark, yeah, or dusk. They would come around the daytime. So a lot of times we leave our horses tied up and we just go walking in the daytime, either hunting on foot or just hiking on foot. And come back, and there'd be some Bigfoot tracks around our horses. And you wonder, okay, they're interested in that. And yeah, I think they can be wherever they want to be anytime they want to be. Very stealthy, very stealthy.
When you talk about their footprints, disappearing, have you seen a in your experience, have you seen a lot of that out in the woods where you'll just be tracking them and then there's no footprints?
Not a lot. A lot of, I didn't look for that part. You just follow it, and all of a sudden it goes off to where you can't get, and you don't know if it just disappeared or if it just went where you couldn't get. But there was one time, and this is when my daughter saw one very clearly, and we found his trackway, and I started following, and it just stopped. And I mean, these tracks were a couple inches deep, and Scott Nelson, who's a cryptolinguist, he was with me at that time, and he couldn't even make a dent in the ground. It was so hard. And yet this thing made that kind of a trackway, and then it just stopped. And I looked up the tree. Now, I've heard this for a lot of years. I've heard people say, well, the trackway stopped. Well, then that's when you throw them out with the baby water. Just nothing can still let a helicopter pick them up. That's what most researchers want to think. No, it's a hoax, right? Well, no, it can happen. Happens like what I mentioned ago through density, if they can change their matter. And but this trackway stopped. I looked, could it get jumped up in a tree? No, trees are, no, didn't do that. Could have jumped over to a boulder? No, nothing like that. They just stopped. So where do you go with that?
Well, I mean, their leg span, the big ones, they got to have a huge leg span. So, I mean, they could have gone over the boulder for all we know. You know what I mean? Because, I mean, they've just got this huge leg span or climbed over or whatever. But
Oh, they
I'm
could
just,
jump.
yeah, they could jump. Exactly. Yeah. Because I know the reports of the ones that people see that go up the embankments, and it's not even any effort for them to go up. So I just find what you do so interesting, and being able to be up there and do this stuff. you know, to have that secret place mm-hmm. to go up and do this.
Yeah, there's a lot of. I just got a call today from a guy wanting to go in the Sierras, going on a Bigfoot expedition. They want to talk to me about it, but I hope they don't want to ask me where to go. You can go anywhere. I mean, it's who you are and where your vibrational frequency is, because we all have a frequency. Everything is frequency. And if you can get the right frequency, you can change matter. And that's just the way our masters did their miracles in the old days. They, you know, that's how we can do things if we just learn how to tune into that, to it right. And the Beach Boys song, everything's a good vibration.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think they were thinking this way, but that's what the song said. And you know, you need to change your own vibration to be healthy, too. If you can keep yourself happy and keep yourself eating right and meditating and not dwelling on negative crap, just keep a positive attitude all the time. You'll keep your vibration high. And that's important, I think, because you don't get sick anymore. I've been sick in ages, and I don't plan on getting sick because I'm a happy guy. I think I eat well, and meditate. You got to meditate, and that's where you open up your pineal gland to receive information, and that's where Tesla got a lot of answers to his problems, was after you come out of a theta-type sleep, and when you pray, you're asking for something. You meditate, you're receiving, and you do that through just emptying your mind and being relaxed, and get up on a nice warm rock somewhere and do that, and you'll find that your frequency and your health and everything gets better. And you learn that this life really is all about just experiences. You know, I've had a lot of experiences. We all have. That's what life's all about, is experiences. But more than just the experience, I think it's how you respond to the experience. If you learn to respond to experiences, no matter what they are, with positiveness and not negativity, you learn to have compassion for people, and you learn what love is all about, really. And when you get into that, and this is my philosophy here, but it's not just mine. It's how masters became masters, was telling us how to do it. And I haven't learned how to walk on water yet, and I haven't learned how to turn water into wine. Mm-hmm. If I could do all that stuff, I'd really I'd save a lot of money, number one.
Absolutely.
Anyway, I get carried off on these things. I mess up the Bigfoot story here, but
no, it's okay. I mean, you know,
it's where Bigfoot's taken me. That's Charlie.
You become very open-minded now. Yeah, one with the universe. That's cool.
Yeah, how big is the universe? Somebody tell me how far. I got kicked out of the scientific club when I said. Somebody here has got to tell me how far it is. Everything is measurable, like Newtonian physics says. Well, tell me how far it is. I want to see the wall. What's on the other side of that wall?
You know what? What I got to give you guys credit for. I mean, you would sit in the dark, in this the shelter, and you hear them walking around. Well, I mean, I can admit, when I've gone camping, the deer would come in. You know, I'd be in a tent, the deer would be coming in. I even had one poking its head through the tent once, okay? So I can only imagine what these things sound like because they're so big and heavy, you know, as they're walking around the outside.
I think I related to a two-legged elephant. The last time I really heard some really chatter was in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And I had arranged it. Scott Nelson and I had been up there three times that summer and spent about a week each time. And didn't get anything definitive. I had some things happen, but unless you can really pin it down, I don't say it's a Bigfoot. If you can make anything else out of it, I make something else out of it until I, you know. So anyway, I wonder where they're still going around. And he left to go back to his teaching job in Missouri. And I got a friend of mine, actually one of the son of one of the guys who used to go up there. And I said, "You want to go up there with me?" And he, "Yeah, let's go up there." So we was going to go up there again, and he backed out. So I went by myself, and you really shouldn't be doing that. I mean, no. Anything can bother you up there. Like I said, I had a 52-inch rattlesnake up there, and 9.5 rattlers on that sucker. He's my hat band now. Bear, a lot of bear out there. But I went by myself in 2011, and set up this little tent. I didn't want to sleep in the shelter. This was closing, and the trees were getting bigger, and it was, anyway, slept outside this little tent. And before I went to bed, though, the mosquitoes were horrible. So it was still daylight. I went inside the tent, and this big old crack happened right outside the tent. I went in there and started reading and everything, like a big tree pop. You know, it's not like a gunshot going off, really, just really loud. And I thought, oh, I got company. Something's out there. And, you know, nobby's following it, by the way. It's not like there's other people around. We know that. I mean, it's just imposing. Nobody wants to do that, number one. Anyway, I wait a couple of minutes. I think, well, I wonder what they want me to do. So I got out of the tent. It's still daylight. And I'm waving this T-shirt around here trying to keep the mosquitoes off of me, you know. And I say, you know, I just want to talk to you. Come out here. I'm here now. I'm not going to hurt you. Not that I could have, but all I had was a 38 pea shooter, you know, with birdshot in it, because that's just to scare the bear away if they come and get your food or something. And nothing happened. Nothing. So I went back in the tent and zipped it up and set my tape recorder on, brand new lithium batteries in there, checked it all out, you know, so everything's fine. And 10 o'clock that night, I hear this chattering going on about 50 feet away, maybe 50 yards or something like that out there. Couldn't tell how far it was. And same time, something popped one of these old barrels we had up there and started tromping around out there. Very bipedal, heavy. And, you know, it's 10 feet away from you. Just, you don't know what it's doing or what it's going to do. My tape recorder wouldn't come on. It wouldn't record. And that's one thing you got to do is make notes and record, because otherwise you're questioning yourself later the next day or so. Did this really happen? Did I dream it? You know. So I'm trying to make. Anyway, this thing kept tromping around. And I started yelling at it. I said, "Hey, I told you not to come back later in dark and scare me, because I say I'm not afraid, but you still don't know if you're going to get eaten or not. You know. Right. I think what this thing was looking for in retrospect was we usually leave food out for them, and I didn't leave anything out because really I only had power bars. I didn't leave anything out because I wasn't sure. I didn't even think about it. And but anyway, it came right up next to my, you hear it walking up right next to my tent and just stop. And all of a sudden, that's it. I didn't hear anything else. I didn't hear it walk away until 4 o'clock that morning. I didn't sleep, by the way. Didn't sleep much at all that night. Making notes, trying to get my tape recorder, see what's going on, why it wouldn't work. Brand new lithium batteries. And I hear this metallic sound right outside the tent. And it's really, I can't even describe it. It wasn't just metallic. Electrical metallic type sounds. I don't know what it was. That's all that happened. That was 4 o'clock in the morning. So as soon as daylight came, I packed up and took off. I had enough power bars last me for 3 days. I thought I was going to stay up there for 3 days, but nope, my question was answered. They're still around. So.
My sister, because as a kid, I used to read all those stories, Albert Ostman, all that stuff. And I remember telling my sister and my family that about Bigfoot, when Albert Ostman was slung over his back, how he gave a slight cough going uphill. And that was her question is, does he have a slight cough? Does he have a cough? Very funny. Okay.
Cough?
Yeah. Because Osmond had said that when he went up a steep incline, he had a cough. And so to this day, because I must have been like 7 or 8, and to this day, my sister remembers that. So she just mentioned it in the chat room. Can't trust family. You just can't. You know?
We got some interesting sounds we captured. I've read that story. You know, I went up there to Toba Inlet. I flew up there in my plane with Peter Byrne and Al Berry and a videographer just to check it out and check out Albert Ostman's story out. We stopped in Camel River and had a helicopter on standby there we could call, because I took my plane. We just slow flew the whole day around looking for the bowl that he was supposedly held in. We was going to get helicoptered in there and stay there to look for artifacts, you know, snuff cans, you know, something like that he said he had. But we never could find the bowl. And flew right into Toba Inlet and checked out the altitude and everything he said he was at when he saw the ships. And we studied it thoroughly, really. And truthfully, I called up John Green and I asked him, I don't think he was in Toba Inlet. None of us think he was. He thought I was he thought I was saying that Albert Osborne lied about it. I said, no, I don't think he lied. I think he was just mistaken. There's a lot of inlets up there. And you take the Indian that supposedly rode him up there on the boat, the timing, and all the stuff. Now, I know he was methodic about how he got out of there, what he seen when he seen Mount Baker and all that stuff, but I don't think he was in Toba Inlet. Just didn't gel. So never did find the bowl. Never did. So we didn't land in a helicopter like I did last week.
It's so interesting because I mean it even shows the family, you know, the family unit at work.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah, they're family. They're running families.
Yeah.
That's pretty much for sure. And I was fortunate to go to Alaska this last summer with the Travel Channel and on that Alaska Killer Bigfoot series they had out. And I think they had me in episode 4 and 5, I think it was. And it took me in there, and they want to know what to do because they want to I don't know if you know the Portlock story or not, but do you know about it, the Portlock story? Well, this whole village abandoned this village about 70 years ago because these people were being torn apart. Several people killed and missing, and there wasn't a bear. They saw this thing, and it was like a Bigfoot monster. And they wanted to rehabituate that area because it's a fishing village, but mm-hmm. no one's there now. And so they wanted to know what to do about this Bigfoot creatures that are up there. And I said, well, chances are there's more than one, number one. I said, but when I was flying over in the helicopter, I noticed the land was, the logging they did there was just brutal. They were wasting logs. They were also overfishing it, I think, and from the pictures I saw anyway. And I told them, you know, I think what happened was, plus they were mining there, and it's doing a lot of things that probably wasn't respectful to the property. And my suggestion was, and they didn't show this on the program, but my suggestion was to show them respect, to show the land respect. If you do come back, if you want to habituate this village again and get the fishing going, first of all, don't shoot at them if you see them. I have no doubt if you've seen a 15-foot tall or 12-foot tall creature like this, you'd probably shoot at it. And that's just what people want to do. They want to kill what they don't understand. And don't do that. But I pretty much guarantee you, if one had popped out of the woods when we were up there, this guy would have shot it.
Nice.
So anyway, it was a fun trip. I really appreciate going up there. I appreciate meeting those guys. They were real people. They weren't actors or even trying to be.
Right.
They really wanted to rehabituate that that site. So I don't know if they're going to or not.
I hear you.
I got off on a tangent there, but
that's okay. It's all good. No, you're a fascinating guy to talk to about this. I mean, you've spent a long time studying these things, you know, going out to get this audio.
More than most, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So I have some audio, and like I said, you sent me one, which I'm going to play right now, a rapid fire one. And then I have the other ones that you sent me 5 years ago, which I happened to dig up and find. So if you could set us up for the rapid fire one, what was happening with this one?
Well, it's probably, I'm not sure, it's probably the two talking to each other. They're just very aggressive sounding, but they're talking to each other. We didn't know at the time if they're looking for the salt and pepper to put on us to eat us. They're going to carry us away in our sleeping bags like they did Albert Osborne. We don't know what we're dealing with, other than they're big, they're strong. Our guns, it's hunting camp. Keep in mind, we're all heavily armed. So we thought, well, we'll shoot these things for coming after the shelter after us. But we never shot at them. And they didn't intimidate us out. But these sounds that you're fixing here are very intimidating. And that's why one guy wouldn't go back up there. And he don't go back to this day. I don't think he goes up there. Too spooky. Very religious person. You don't know where to put that in your religious paradigm, you know.
Absolutely. All right, here we go. Yeah,
That's it.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to mess with that either, boy.
That one's Warren Johnson. That's when we get kind of comfortable. We realize they weren't really maybe coming in after us, but he's the one that said, "That's not nice." You know, but that was from Inside the Shelter. Al Berry, that's his recording. He had that out outside his microphone, outside the shelter, about 40 feet up behind the shelter, actually. And you don't know what they're doing. You don't know. They're arguing over the food because we leave food out for them. Mm-hmm. And that's what we thought at the time. Or they might just be arguing about what to do about us.
Wow, that's incredible. Okay, the next one is the attention one.
Okay. Well, I think it's just same thing. I don't know what to think. It's attention display, I think. It's just... literally, what you heard the first time just a minute ago is language, by the human definition of language that Scott Nelson determined. Mm-hmm. And this one is probably just attention getting. It probably is not language. We'll find out. It's been so long since I know what I've sent you.
And away we go. Sounds like speech. You know,
that's
really
exactly
close.
Right. Yeah, that last little mooey tail sound you heard there at the last is in the human range. And that's the actual clip right there that Dr. Curlin studied thoroughly. That's what he talks about in the paper they wrote. And it shows on the graph in this Man Like Monsters on Trial, and that's where his paper is written in that book. And it shows the human range, and it's got these icons of different tones that they were making, sounds of. And a lot of them were outside the human range, way outside. And then that last little bit where it says "muy couple couple muy tail" like that, that was inside the human range. And that's pretty cool because I got called off on the Art Bell program years ago, and somebody said, "Oh, that's human. You know, somebody's playing with you guys." Well, you know, no. Now that we've got all this study done and the facts are out there, people that say it's dogs fighting or anybody can make those sounds or
right.
They're just not doing their homework of what we had done with these sounds. They've been out there for 50 years. They can't be debunked because they're not debunkable.
Right, right. Yeah, that one, that sounds like human speech in a couple of spots.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. In fact, we sent it to a primate specialist back somewhere back east here somewhere, and they heard it. And she's supposed to be a scientist. She's supposed to be. She is a scientist, but she didn't do scientific because we sent her $2,500 to, you know, look at this thing. And she just listened to it and said, "Oh, that's somebody playing with it. That's human." Well, she didn't do a study on it at all. She just said that after she listened. That's not science. Albert got really mad. I just said, "Well, there goes my $2,500. And he wrote to her. He did everything he could to try to get her funding taken away from her. She wouldn't give us our money back because she thought we was playing with her. But that's how narrow-minded some people are when it comes to the subject matter. It's just they don't want to believe that anything can They don't want to believe that something like that could be out there because only humans have the vocal mechanism for language, and this represents language.
Right. That one's something. This is the one you talked about earlier, the one that sounded like a question.
Yeah, that was in 74. That was when I got my tape recorder out of my saddlebag and just started recording this stuff going on. And there's some things in there just sound like they were asking me questions during that evening. And again, I was mimicking them after listening to them later. Fortunately, I sent that off to Alan Berry because during this time, my house had burned down. I lost all my good recordings in the house fire, but I'd sent that one off to Al, so he sent it back to me, and that's how I made my second CD out of this one. And it shows the wood knocking. We say wood knocking. You don't see them beating on trees, but I know they do because it's rhythmically. And it's quite interesting, really, that happened to me. And at the time, you don't realize how significant it is. And I do now, I think. And if I had it to all do over again, I think I'd probably done some things differently, but I don't have it to do over again, you know. So,
right. Right. Yeah. Next one is the talk to me.
Oh, same night.
Yeah. You're trying to talk to this.
Yeah. Now those sounds are so different from the ones a couple of years prior. Same camp, by the way. I asked Scott Nelson, does the same type mechanism make the same sounds?
Right.
And he said, yes, it's the same creature. He thinks they slowed their vocalizations down to possibly something we could understand because they talk so rapidly in these other recordings. And that night in 74, it wasn't. That right there was directed at me. And I don't know what they were asking me, but I wish I did. But he says the same vocal mechanism did it.
They were trying. Yeah. Here is the samurai.
Oh,
this is one I thought sounded so Asian the last time I heard it. I mean, it just blew my mind. Here we go, guys.
Yeah, that's when I saw it. That's strange when you. Most people say, well, if you don't see what made the sound, you don't know what made the sound. That's so true. But that night, I got to see what's making the sound. So it made me feel better.
That's crazy. It does sound Asian. It really does.
Yeah, it does. Very, very Asian. And, you know, some of the vocalizations we've heard up there, and I was down in Yucatan and got with some Mayan descendants who still speak the Mayan language. And the Mayan language isn't Spanish. You know, Spaniards made them start learning Spanish and take up Spanish names. But the Mayans, their language is very similar to this. And then I find out, it's not as rapid as this, but then I find out they got this birthmark at the base of their spine when they're born. Some of them do. And that birthmark is, according to the DNA, comes out of Mongolia. So that's I just thought I'd throw that in. It's kind of interesting.
So this is, to make people understand this, this is before there were digital voice recorders. This is tape, right?
Oh, this is tape, yeah. Tape, okay. Cassette tape.
Cassette, recorder. Right, cassette tape. Mm-hmm. Incredible. I have a whistling one down here.
Oh, whistle. Yeah, the whistles, let me set this up, okay. Are done through the vocal cavity and not through the lips. We whistle through our lips, and you'll hear, I think it's the one I sent you, you'll hear the whistle. Warren Johnson whistling at it, and then it's whistling back. But it's whistling really pretty harmonics. had that studied, according to Professor Curlin, it's done through the vocal cavity and not through the lips.
Okay, here we go.
Yeah, it was Warren Johnson stepping. He's passed away now, but he was kind of the leader of the group. When he wasn't there, I would kind of be the one that we felt like this one voice is all should be out there when trying to communicate with him.
This is just this. I mean, how did you get this off the tapes too? I mean, what was the process? Because I mean, you just didn't have a cable to download. This is not like it is today.
Well, he just had the cassettes, and now since then, I've taken the cassettes and put them on CDs and put them on DAT, and that's what we've done to preserve them. Because, yeah, tapes would be crumbling after about 20 years.
But how were you able, like you made these, well, I guess by the time you made these files, you were able to transfer them.
Well, the first thing we did was took him to the studio, yeah, because when I made my first CD in 90s, that's the first CD that I made with Al Berry's story, and it's narrated by Jonathan Frakes, Star Trek Next Generation, and we went down to Burbank to make that happen, and that's when, you know, you transfer him over to do all that on commercial CD. So they're all preserved, and got a lot of them. We're all recording. It's not like just one or two recordings. Bill McDowell was recording. Johnson's were recording. Al Berry was recording. So we'll have the same stuff. So there's a lot of cooperation there. Mm-hmm. But again, I'm the only one with their neck stuck out that's talking about this stuff. The other guys that are remaining, what a couple that are still alive, they don't get into it like I do. I had asked Bill, my good friend down in Merced, California, he said, you know, it's hard enough to get people to even believe in there's a Bigfoot out there, much less the stuff that went on with us up there. Yeah. So he's, I just don't even talk. But he's pretty stable and kind of very well thought of in the whole community. And he just don't want to deal with it, you know, because it's strange and most people just can't get their head around it, that could exist. But more and more people are nowadays. That's why I say these bigger groups, these conventions, when I speak at them, are housing thousands of people, not hundreds. Like used to be in speaker, just be a few hundred there, maybe 200 or 300. Now there's 2,000 or 3,000.
And, I think I remember telling you the last time you were on that we had a house not close to Happy Camp, but about 20 miles from Happy Camp. And I remember going up to Happy Camp. My dad, you know, knew I was into this stuff, so he drove me up to Happy Camp to check it out. And of course, they had the Bigfoot, you know, museum thing going on.
Yeah, yeah.
And the guy in the green SUV, right? The Bigfoot hunter.
That's a
Bigfoot research on the
side. Peter Byrne. That would have been Peter Byrne, probably.
Yeah. So it was funny because, you know, I'm just like, wow. They're really, because even though I had read up on it and stuff, I never realized that, you know, people were actually out. And these big SUVs and stuff, you know, going out and doing
that. Oh, it's a big deal. You know, I had no idea 50 years ago that it could turn into something like we're doing now. No clue. Didn't realize how significant it was and just didn't think about it. A lot of people are into it now. And that's why I'm considered the grayback, one of the graybacks. Now, Peter Byrne, I just talked to him the other day. He's still alive. The guy's at 95 years old. He's a total flesh and blood. And you know, people say, well, you're either flesh and blood or you're a woo-wooer. Well, nothing is just flesh and blood. Nothing. It's all energy, frequency, and vibration. We are at our most minute level of existence, frequency, energy, vibrating at a level. And you find frequency of anything, you can change the matter. And that's just science. And yet it's hard for people to get their head around that. You know, you think you're making things happen. Well, you are making things happen. I didn't say that right. But anyway, I thought I'd throw that out there.
Well, you know, I agree with you because in doing paranormal work like I have for the last almost 20 years, there are certain people that are more inclined to see stuff and experience stuff than others. And I agree with you that it's whatever frequency they're on.
Yeah. And people talk about these things being a mind speak. They ask me if they ever mind speak to you. I don't know. I'm too analytical. I always try to figure out, what am I thinking about to make that thought come into my head? You don't know. But I do believe if they can tune into your frequency and they can mind speak. I don't doubt that. I don't doubt too much of anything anymore because everything's possible. But right. I know one time Warren Johnson and I we'd heard this, him and I were up there by ourselves, and we heard this out there mouthing off, one of these Bigfoots, and he had to be behind this big tree, and we was inside the shelter. I said, well, let's jump out there right quick and we'll see it run off because it's night, you know, it's nighttime, but you know, starlight and moonlight at 8,400 feet elevation is bright. You can see, you read a newspaper. And so we jump out of the shelter and we'll start walking up there. We're probably 10, 15 feet apart, you know, just slowly walking up. We're going to see this thing run away. We're going to get a glimpse of this thing. And all of a sudden we're froze, just like in a force field. I mean, that's how I relate to it in my book, just a force field. You can't go any further. And we go back, and we weren't talking to each other. We were just really careful, and couldn't get any closer to that tree. And he looked over me and said, I don't know about you, but I can't go. And I said, I can't either. So we turned around and went back, and we no sooner got back to the shelter, this thing starts mouthing off again, and with his chatter, and you think it's just like he was laughing at you or something, like I showed you guys. I brought this up to a scientist, Dr. Leroy Fish, actually, who's passed away now. But he said, you know, well, science doesn't want to know about your fears. And I said, you know, well, it wasn't fear. It wasn't. He said, well, it had to be infrasound or pheromones. So it being, I think, infrasound affects you. You know, you can't hear it, but it affects you. It's what large animals use. Tigers use it to prey on things. Actually, I think Hitler used it to control people years ago. But giraffes use it. Elephants use it. It's a sound that you can emanate. Large animals emanate that, and it can affect you, but you don't hear it. So I thought it was probably pheromones. Because infrasound, because pheromones only work within the same species. But now that I believe there's a human component to these things, it could have been pheromones, or maybe it just been an attribute that we don't understand how they brought that on to us. That's another thing too. How did they either hypnotize us all? One time we thought our camp was being torn apart up there, and we look outside the shelter door later when it all stopped and nothing's changed, and yet you heard the barrels being ripped open and stuff, and yet they weren't. So what do you do with that? You know, they really hypnotize us all, or do we really hear something? Did their voice mechanism able to do that kind of a sound? It's very expansive. It's very unique. Their voice mechanism is much superior to ours. I have no doubt they can mimic just about any animal they want to mimic in the woods. What gives them away is aptitude. They're very loud. I thought I heard an 800-pound owl up there one time.
Well, it makes you wonder because, I mean, there's also that part of twilight. You know, people go into that almost that twilight sleep before they fall asleep, and you'll hear sounds.
Well, that's the alpha state.
Yeah, alpha sounds that don't exist. I mean, you might hear an explosion in your house, but or something falls or something, but nothing falling.
Yeah, that's, you get an alpha stage. You're kind of working outside your beta awareness. So we're in a beta state right now, and you get into the alpha state. It's just before you drift off of the theta state. And I talk about this in my quantum book that you just showed. Thank you for that, by the way. But yeah, it's in between that state where you're just relaxed and you're not thinking, because that's the trouble with some of us. We think too much, trying to figure everything out. You just got to relax and get into that alpha. That alpha state is where you're talking about right now, where you're just fading off and, yeah.
Oh, but yeah.
Yeah, I've had some strange things happen to me during the night when I'm not even there. Yeah.
Well, you know, and being out in the woods like I have, my mother and I used to camp all the time up at Mount Lassen and stuff. I mean, you do hear some weird stuff. you know, like at night, like you say, things being moved around that aren't being moved around. You get up in the morning and you think, well, gee, that's going to be over there, but it's still where it was. So there is definitely something odd going on in these places.
You know, I think if we could see everything really going on around us, like I say, we only see within certain parameters of light's frequency. If we could see everything, we'd really be amazed. I mean, there's all kinds of things going on around us in different dimensions that we just don't see. And sometimes you feel them. That's where I think ghosts are. You know, they're in the fourth dimension. They just haven't vibrated. Their vibrational frequency hadn't gotten high enough to get where they want to go, which is either in the fifth dimension or where it depends on where you were with your life. And if you got to respond to, where's your karma going to be? Do you need to go back and respond to something better and learn what love and compassion is all about? Or are you just going to fade away? No, you're not going to fade. Nothing dies. So where are you going to be? People see these Bigfoots cloaking. They can do that. According to science, they can do that. And also, right on that Missing 401, The Hunted, that David Pilates put out, there's an episode right after my 15-minute section in there that this tree, she was hunting in a tree stand. And, did you see that? Yeah. She's seen this pixelation, like a shimmering effect going from one tree to another.
Yeah.
And that's what I've heard so many people report, you know, and there's got to be an answer to that. These people aren't lying. They're not all out to just, oh, fuzzy, you know, or smoking something strange. By the way, our camp was very sober. None of us were doing drugs or anything like that. It's something going on out there you just can't see. And, you know, I use the analogy of a bear's olfactory sense. You know, a bear can smell 2,100 times better than we can. That's the science anyway. Well, we know they can do that. We can't smell that way. So there's something going on there we can't. Same with our eyes. We can't see all the frequencies going on. If we could see those frequencies, we'd probably see the ghosts. And that's why people do see ghosts, is because of the temperature, the plasma field, everything, the fourth dimension is where they're at, I think. And going through time and trying to get somewhere, are going to, maybe they're waiting to make the right choice of what body embodiment to come back in them so they can respond to something, because it's all about experiences. We're very fortunate. Human beings are very fortunate to be who we are. And if you get into biblical, I was raised religiously. I'm not religious now, but we're all spiritual beings, whether you like it or not. What one man calls God, another man calls the science of physics, quantum physics. That's sure. Nikola Tesla said that. What was I going to that? It's laid back here.
What do you have to say to all these new up and coming Bigfoot investigators? What advice do you give them?
Oh, keep your open mind. You know, they got an open mind. If you have an open mind, you're liable to have something happen, and then you can maybe analyze it. But just don't make up your mind on what you think they are. Just don't make up your mind. That's the parameters that classical science is in. And so many researchers are going, well, if you can't see it, show me the proof. Well, quantum physics, you're not going to see something with your eyes. You're going to have to understand it through mathematics or through physics, which is mathematics. And it just, I think that's the best advice I can give anybody. Have an open mind.
One thing I can say is that, I see a lot of these photos that people take, you know, some of them, okay. But the one I thought that was so tangible was the Caltrans camera.
Oh, yeah.
That was something. You know, just to see something like that pick up, and for Caltrans to go, hey, you know, we don't know what this is, but it's there. I mean, that's
a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think our government even knows about these things. I'm quite sure of it. But, you know, if it gets out, what we're talking about now, if it gets out, yeah, and the government says, well, like the government just said, now we can believe in UFOs, right? Now we can believe in aliens, right? Well, we couldn't do that before. You know, it's just a weather balloon, right? Roswell, that's what Roswell was. But no, they had an alien in confinement for a few years right there. And, when the government says you can believe in Bigfoot because they're out there, then everybody's going to see them. Because they'll tell us, you know.
Do you think, and I know this is silly, but do you think, you know, for the newer generation of Bigfoot guys that Harry and the Hendersons really got people's attention.
That was funny. That was good. Yeah, I liked the very end of it where they all just sort of came out of the trees. They were camouflaged to the trees, you know. And that was interesting. That made me think of when I mentioned earlier when I was in Alaska. How much time we got? Where are we?
Anyway? Keep going. Just blah. We're good.
I mean, is this an hour and a half or 2 hours or how? Yeah.
Well, we can go 2 hours if you want. Whatever you want.
Really?
You're the boss. Well, I'm open.
I fall asleep here.
Right. I don't drink beer or nothing. This is it, man. This is it. Bottle of water and chit chat with people.
Well, anyway, there's a mystery up there for sure, but I do believe there is something going on in Port Lock, Alaska, that area there. Like, there's other things going on in Alaska that I know about that has nothing to do with Port Lock, but other than it's Bigfoot, there's some big Bigfoots up there, huge ones. And, but what am I going to say about that? I get tired about this time. It's late. It's not dark. It's not late where you're at, though.
Well, if you want to, you know, knock off, I'm good with that too. I mean, I'm fine with it. You know, if you're tired or whatever, up to you. I'll leave it.
Well, let me say this before you do. If I do, not off, drop off, sleep here
on top on the screen.
Past my bedtime. No, my website is ronmoorhead.com.
Okay.
And that's where people can download my books, Voices of Wilderness. Comes with a embedded sounds if you order the book, or if you just download it, you'll hear the sounds. The Quantum Bigfoot is there, and I have two CDs, both of them about 40 minutes long.
There you go.
That's one of them. And I wrote that as my first book. It's my chronicle of doing this, and it's 40 years of doing it. And I kind of like that book. Saw a lot of them still. But they're all filled through Amazon. So the only time I sign them is when I'm at a conference or something. That's the only time I have the chance to, because I don't stock them here at the house anymore.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know what? I'm going to let you get some sleep. Hour and a half. I think we're good. I'd love to have you on again to chat another time with you about, you know, like the stuff in Alaska and stuff. How's that sound?
Yeah, Alaska is a wild frontier. It's a interesting place. I used to live up there. I was in the military up there, in the Air Force, Elmendorf, for a couple of years. And there's a lot of, more than people would realize, there's stuff going on all over that people just don't realize. And again, if we could see in all frequencies, we'd be amazed at what'd be going on.
Absolutely. I have a last question on the chat room.
Yeah, good. I need questions.
Bigfoot are shy and secluded. Is hunting them causing them to be is it intrusive for us to be hunting them?
I don't encourage that at all, but some people think that's the big dollar shot, you know, if you can shoot them. But you know, Fred Beck, supposedly behind Mount St. Helens, shot one, and he swears up and down he hit it dead on and fell, and they never could find the body. But, you know, I've had other people say that I had them right in the scope, but I couldn't shoot them. It looked too human-like. But it's human nature, especially if you got a gun, to shoot things you don't understand.
Right.
That's just a shame, but that's what we do as humans. And no, it's wrong to shoot at them. It's wrong to even go out with that attitude. In fact, you got to go out just neutral. Just be simple. Have fun. I've got a whole bunch of bullet points on what to do and what not to do. It's because sometimes it's what not to do that's more important than what you do. And have fun. Mm-hmm. That's what life is supposed to be about. So
aren't there some states that have protections on them, though? I thought Eureka had protections on them.
I don't think there's protection in Eureka. I think it's up in southern Washington. The county passed an ordinance like that. Yeah.
Okay.
Probably a gorge up there.
Little creek or whatever it was, yeah.
Yeah, they won't do that until they acknowledge them. Science hasn't acknowledged these things, and they won't as long as their funding is coming from the government. Whoever controls the money is controlling the narrative. That's why I think we're going to see a lot of interesting things coming up in the future. A lot of interesting things. I think we're going to be inundated with, before too many more years, if not sooner, with aliens, really, UFOs. And you can see more and more of them. They're going to come out. And we're in the age of enlightenment now, so things are going to come out of the woods, and we're going to know more than we've ever known. And we got a lot more to learn. We haven't evolved like we're supposed to evolve as humans. I wanted to say more about who we are as humans, because if you go into biblical scriptures, I'm going to do that because I'm not religious, but I know the scriptures because I was raised that way. God in the Bible is plural.
Mm-hmm.
It's plural. You go into 1 John 1:5, it says God is light. If you get into it really deep, the light people created us in their image. And they are the ninth dimensional people who are interdimensional. They can go in any dimension they want to. Other aliens are just certain dimensions. Not all of them can cross over into another dimension. Actually, don't. Another reason I think they're hybridization under this earth is because they want to acclimate their species and their frequency into this environment. However, you get into light beings and who we are special as human beings and what we're supposed to be like and what's really in store for us if we learn how to evolve into consciousness of love and compassion. So that's a good place to end it before I fall asleep.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It's always a treat having you on.
Oh, thanks, Charlie. And I appreciate that.
I so appreciate you coming on. And I would love to have you on again to talk about like the ones in Alaska and, you know, maybe at some point, you know, where you're living now. I mean, you know.
Yeah, well, I'm this is what I do. I love these things because I can sit here. Now, when I was on the West Coast, which is where I've been all my life, these people interviewed me from the East Coast 3 hours earlier.
There you go.
It's working against me now. I was on one of these just the night before last, and it was the same thing. I started at 10 o'clock, but it was only 6 o'clock where they were, I think, something like that, or 4.
Next time we'll start earlier for you, too. I get
well,
it.
Well, if you ever pre-record, that works out really well for me.
We could do that, too. See, we could do whatever you want.
Well, Charlotte, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
For you, anything, okay?
Oh.
But I really appreciate you coming on. And it's always good to see you, okay?
Thank you. Same here.
All right, Ron, you have a good one.
Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, that was fun. I love having him on. It is so fun. And every time, hang on a second, I'm looking down here. Okay, there we go. Every time he's on, it just blows me away. You know, those sounds, because I don't want to say Bigfoot fiend, it sounds terrible, but I am a person that followed Bigfoot since I was like, as soon as I could read books. My first trip to Mount Rainier impressed me because I knew it was Bigfoot country, so I had to buy my book, and I still have the Mount Rainier Bigfoot case book. Stuff's like ancient in there, but it's still there. But I want to thank you guys for coming tonight. We usually don't do a Friday night, but it was well worth it for Ron Moorhead, you know, to have him on for you guys to hear those Bigfoot sounds. They're a lot different than what Mike Patterson has up in Oregon. But, you know, different dialects, like he says, you know, different forms of the species or whatever. Who knows? But, I hope everybody learned something tonight. Sunday I'll be back reading. So I'll be back, reading something Sunday. We're going to read something. So come back Sunday at 6 p.m. Pacific time, and that's what I'll be doing. Remember, I have a ghost tour scheduled for March 26th, and I will take you on a ghost hunt, whether it's an old hotel or whether it is a haunted cemetery. We're going to do this, okay? And no, it's not one of these psychic tours where they take you, you know, room to room or grave to grave or anything like that and blah, 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 blah. We're going to take you out with our equipment, and we are going to show you how to do a ghost hunt and show you how to use that. You know, how to use all that equipment. So it's going to be just like a real ghost hunt for you. Okay. Nothing jellied over. Plus you get to meet me, spend time with me, right? Yeah. I can tell you're all excited. Anyway, I want to thank you all for coming tonight. And if you like the show, share it with 5 people. If you hated the show, share it with 5 people. Anyway, we're equal opportunity here at California Haunts Radio. Check out our website at californiahauntsradio.com. And if you want to check out the paranormal website, that's California Haunts Radio, CaliforniaHaunts.org. See, it's like a tongue twister thing going on. Okay. Again, if you're watching from YouTube, please subscribe to our YouTube page. There's a little guy down in the corner down there that it's a little ghostie with a Sherlock Holmes hat and a magnifying glass. He's investigating. That's our chief investigator. And click on that, and that'll subscribe you so you know when videos like this come up. If you can't find YouTube right away, the best way to do it is to type in California Haunts on YouTube. Boom, we should pop up. But if not, we do have a dedicated URL, but it's complicated. But if not, go to our website, the radio website, click on the video that's on the front page, and that'll take you directly to the YouTube site. Now you see that little thing flashing along the bottom. This is my PBS moment. California Haunts Paranormal Investigation Team is a nonprofit. So in order to bring this show to you, everything comes out of pocket, just like all the equipment that the paranormal group uses comes out of pocket. So I need help like anybody else to keep things going, and I want to keep things going. I'm a journalist by trade, and I enjoy doing the show and bringing everybody interesting people that I interview and information to you. So if you can kind of help me out, I'd appreciate it. That's at paypal.me at California Haunts. Or if you're uncomfortable with PayPal, that's Venmo, and then type in California Haunts. But I'd really appreciate it because I do want to keep the bills paid and keep the stuff going. You know, if computer breaks or camera goes down or something like that, I have to replace it out of my own pocket. Okay? Anyway, I want to thank you guys for coming again tonight. And don't forget about the ghost tour. You can find a link to that ghost tour and get more details on the California Haunts Radio website. Just go on the website and go up to extras and click on that, and it'll take you down to special events, and that's where I have it listed. So I want to thank you all, and I will see you Sunday so we can read a haunted book. Have a good one.